Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome back to our Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercer Spirituality Center in Epsom. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me here in the studio and to talk about our center, our programs, or about social justice. Today, my visitor is Pip Nichols. Pip, a warm welcome to our radio programs.
Thank you.
Pip has been a member of the Obert Baxter Merton Kirk Catholic lay community for over 35 years. She spent time at the Carmelite Spiritual Life Institute, Colorado, United States. And since returning to New Zealand, Pip has been a member of the New Zealand Contemplative Network. She has also been involved in bringing contemplation teachers to New Zealand. Pip lives in Wellington and has been to our Mercer Spirituality Center for a few days, where she facilitated two workshops and a six-day live-in retreat. Pip, you've been a member of the Obert Baxter Merton Kirk Catholic lay community for many years. Can you tell me more about this community?
The community grew from Baxter's death in 1972, and different people who knew Baxter took different aspects of his being and tried to live that out. And our community took his manaakitanga and his Catholicism. And we began in out the back of Huntley, and we had a centre out the back of Rikiorangi in Waikanae. And in about 1975, we purchased land in Featherston. So Aubert relates to Suzanne Aubert from the Home of Compassion. Mm-hmm. Baxter is James K. Baxter. Merton is Thomas Merton, the great contemplative, and Norman Kirk, who was the Prime Minister in New Zealand at that time. So these are the ancestors and the values of our community.
Mm. And I understand that you've spent many years of exploring different ways of contemplation. You spent time exploring and experiencing different ways of spirituality, and even so, 1 year in a Buddhist monastery. And then you came back to the Catholic roots and you spent time in a Carmelite monastery. What was your most significant experience during all these times of searching?
I think in a nutshell, you can run but you can't hide. And I grew up a Catholic and went to a Catholic boarding school, and it would have been very easy for me to have become a nun. Mm-hmm. And I found myself in Thailand interested in Buddhism, because when I mentioned Aubert Baxter Merton Kirk, I was always interested in Merton, the contemplative. And at that time in New Zealand in the early 70s, there was very little contemplative spirituality. Mm-hmm. So I went to Buddhism, where it's plentiful. And found myself in not only in a Thai monastery, Buddhist monastery, but as a nun in that Thai monastery. And later that year, I met a Tibetan Buddhist teacher who said to me, "What are you doing as a nun?" And as soon as he asked me that question, I knew that I was a nun, and I'm only talking about myself. I was a nun because I was more afraid to live in the world. Mm-hmm. And he challenged me to live in the world, and saying that you can't give up what you don't already have. And I hadn't yet had a life. I hadn't yet developed my egoic self.
Yeah.
So, darn it, I needed to disrobe and to go and live in the world. So I've been spending the last 40 years
living in the world.
Living in the world, yeah.
And you're actively involved in Christian contemplative practices. You just said that that's one reason why you ended in, or why you came to the Buddhist monastery. But you also bring contemplative teachers now to New Zealand. What are your hopes and dreams for them when they work here in New Zealand?
The contemplative tradition within Christianity has been kept alive in the monasteries rather than parish life. Mm-hmm. So when I did return to New Zealand in the late 80s, there were still no contemplative teachers as such. It was before the internet, so we could read books. Evelyn Underhill was perhaps the first writer, but then Thomas Merton, and now there are many others. So annually I would go overseas for a retreat to spend time with the teacher to be nourished in that way. And I felt that if not everyone in New Zealand could afford to do that. So I got the idea that it would be better for me to invite teachers to come to New Zealand, because if I was thirsty for these teachings, how many other people would be thirsty for these teachings? So that's where it began. If one person can have some of their thirst quenched by the wisdom from these teachers, that does it for me.
That's great. A few weeks ago, I invited Father Peter Murphy to come here, and I interviewed him on Christian meditation. My interview with him is still available on the Planet Radio website if you click on archives. Father Peter mentioned Christian meditation and centering prayer. Where does contemplation fit in here?
Contemplation is not so much a what, it's a how. And so I also am a practitioner of centering prayer, but it's not so much that I do that. It's contemplation is about how we do everything. It's how we drink our cup of tea. It's how we drive over here from where we were. It's how we sit at the red stop sign. It's how we stand in the supermarket. It's our sense of presence and our sense of heartfulness. That I use that word rather than mindfulness. It's our sense of heartfulness that we bring to everything. So there will be many contemplatives who have never been near a church or heard of Jesus the Christ or Buddha or any of the great teachings, and they have learnt how to do everything that they do. And not always everything, we're human. But throughout their day at some point. I mean, I've met Komata and Kuia who have a great sense of presence and a great grace,
yes,
in how they do things. And that's the contemplative spirit.
Very interesting, yeah. For those of you who've just tuned in, you are listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. If you miss any of our programs, please check out planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk, or send me an email at muffintalk840@gmail.com. My visitor today is Pip Nichols. Pip has explained to us how she found her way to Christian spirituality and contemplation practices. She told us that she was a nun in a Buddhist monastery, but she found back to her roots, her Christian roots, and was always looking for a contemplative way. And one of the persons who inspired her was Merton, who helped her finding this way back to the contemplative tradition in Christianity. Because at this stage, it was in the 1970s, it was mainly alive only in monasteries and not in parishes. And when she found good teachers in the United States, she was thinking if she was looking for some nourishment from these kind of contemplative teachers, not everyone in New Zealand could afford going to the United States to meet these teachers. So she started to invite them to come here and let the people know what contemplation is. And it's not only what, it's especially how. And contemplation means how do we do everything? Everything in our daily life, and it's a sense of heartfulness. Pip, you facilitated a workshop in our center with the title, The Quality of Mercy is Not Strained. The title comes from Portia's speech in Shakespeare's The Merchant of Venice. Do you think that Shakespeare was also exploring contemplation?
If he was, I don't know that he knew it. What he was certainly exploring was justice, and that justice is insufficient. Mm-hmm. That what, and particularly in this Portia speech, was the requirement for mercy. And Portia goes on to say that in the course of justice, none of us would see salvation. And one might use the word life instead of salvation,
yes,
that we do pray for mercy, and that same prayer doth teach us to render the deeds of mercy. And so Shakespeare was saying that if we just live in a world of justice, which is very much the secular society where there's punishment for the actions that we do, it's not sufficient. It leaves us short. And so Shakespeare was certainly exploring mercy. Unfortunately, the play is a tragedy and there is no mercy shown at the end of the play, but it was certainly those themes that Shakespeare was exploring.
And can you tell me more about this workshop that you facilitated at the Mercer Spirituality Center? How did it go?
I think it went really well. It would be certainly preferable to ask the people who attended how they felt it went. But what we did was we went through Portia's speech line by line. And even the first line of the speech, and some of the listeners will be familiar with it, we pretty much all New Zealanders did it in about the third or the fourth form, was the quality of mercy is not strained. And we went through it and really slowly in a Lectio Divina way, which Lectio Divina means sacred reading. So again, it's not so much what we're reading, it's how we are reading. And it's like we're reading poetry here, we're reading psalms here. And so what does the word quality mean to each of us? What does the word mercy mean to each of us? What does the word strained mean to each of us? So it was in this very slow process way that we come to a considerably deeper understanding of what Shakespeare was referring to, not to in a dogmatic way, but into a very subjective, personal way for each of the people who attended the workshop.
And you're also facilitating currently a retreat in our center. Can you tell us more about how a six-day live-in retreat looks like? Do you meet with the retreatants once or twice a day?
The retreatants come with a frequently unknowing heart, other than they know that there's a sense that they want to do a retreat. And I meet with them once a day for up to an hour. And then we have some communal Lectio Divina in the evening for about half an hour.
And that 1 hour, is that with each one in a single meeting or are they together in a group?
I meet with each of them individually throughout the day.
Okay. And you also meet within the group?
And then we come together in the evening at around 7 o'clock. And that's because ultimately, even in a retreat, we don't live in isolation from each other. We are ultimately a communal peoples.
Yes.
And so there's a time for coming together communally in our silence. It's a silent retreat.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that anybody could participate in this kind of retreat? Or do you have to go through an introduction first?
I think if there's an introduction, it's through great love or great suffering. It's until we are face to face with the mystery of great love or great suffering, and we find ourselves wanting with how to live and understand these two extraordinary experiences, that we start to say, so where do we get the support from? Where do we get the wisdom from? Where do we get the compassion from to be with ourselves during these two great experiences? So I think that anyone who's experienced great love, great suffering, would certainly do well on a retreat of this type.
Do you also have groups that come together and for a retreat? So people who know each other before or...
Not necessarily at all, because it is a silent retreat, so the retreatants don't talk to each other. They just talk with me. No doubt occasionally they might have to answer their cell phone or respond to something like that. But no, if people do come and they know each other, that's wonderful as well, because I guess there can be some shared experience at the end of the retreat. But frequently it's just a group of people who've come together as individuals.
And you just mentioned silent retreat because there are different types of retreats. Can you tell me more about what is the silent retreat? Is that how much silence is there? How much talking is there possible?
There are a couple of types of silence, Beata, and one is the silence which is a lack of sound, a lack of talking.
Yes.
And then there's the silence that a six-day retreat leads us towards, which is when some of the chatter inside our mind also slows down a little bit. The Buddhists call it monkey mind, butterfly mind, whatever. But if we have a moment to reflect and to stop, our mind continues on. And we're not trying to stop the mind. It's the function of the brain to think, so that's seriously helpful.
Yes.
It's not to be attached to those thoughts and to allow some spaciousness. Cynthia Bourgeau, one of the great current mystics, her definition of the kingdom of God or the kingdom of heaven is that sense of spaciousness. And it is possible to have that sense of spaciousness within ourselves, within our being, within our life. And that's where contemplation leads. We don't just do it for the sake of spaciousness, though. As naturally as a result of spaciousness comes compassion, comes gratitude, comes awe for the whole of life. So that would be the ultimate reason as to why anyone would be interested in contemplation or doing a retreat.
Would you also give a certain thought to the whole group about, or do you think is in that silent retreat, is it more up to the people, the individuals?
When we first meet, I certainly don't know what they're going to bring, and sometimes they don't know what they're going to bring. And so I've met with three people today already, and when we first begin, we begin by coming home to ourselves. So we begin with some silence, and for people to come back home to their own breath, come back home to their own human incarnation.
Yes.
Is the really important part. This is not, I mean, many people turn to spirituality or religion to be out of their body, to be out of their mind, to be out of themselves. And it's about coming home to ourselves. That extraordinary paradox in coming home to ourselves, we ultimately come home to the Christ or the God or the Buddha nature.
And to face reality, and in the end, that's what you said in the beginning, that you, when you go to a monastery or when you go to contemplative studies, it's not escaping the current world, but you're still within the world.
A definition of a contemplative, in a way, is someone who can say yes to the pain of life, and yes to the joy of life.
That's a good way. Yes to the pain of life and yes to the joy of life. Pip, you're also a spiritual companion. I hear much of it already. And in your introduction on the Mercy Spirituality Center flyer, you mention that you would like to create environments where people can naturally get in touch with their contemplative soul and have a deeper relationship with the stuff of their own life and the life of what Merton calls our true self. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you mean with it?
I used to be a massage therapist, and all I felt that a massage therapist did was to create an environment in which the person who was being massaged could let go and relax. A massage therapist doesn't relax us. They create the environment in which we can relax. In the same way, a spiritual companion doesn't make anyone more spiritual. They create an environment in which the person can let go and get in touch with their own sense of true self, their own sense of Christ consciousness within, their own sense of the divine within, the divine indwelling. Mm-hmm. And that's what a spiritual companion provides. And just want to think about that, because I'm aware that some of your listeners will be housebound or live in remote areas. It is possible to receive good spiritual companioning through Skype or by telephone. I wouldn't have thought it true myself, but I've experienced my own spiritual director lives overseas, and I also offer spiritual companioning to people via Skype, and I know that other spiritual companions do as well. So that's just an offer there for people who might listen, that even if we are living in an isolated way, it is possible. Just because this path that we're on, this path towards saying yes to the pain of life and yes to the joy of life, it's a lonely path. And at times we do need someone to be able to share that with someone who's perhaps one step further along or not. Someone asks St. Benedict, the founder of monasticism, what the role of a monk was. He said the role of a monk is to fall down and get up again, to fall down and get up again. And that's certainly been my experience too.
Yeah, that's real companionship. That's why spiritual direction is now more or less, most of the spiritual directors call themselves a spiritual companion, as Sister Christina said the other day. When you do spiritual companioning, do you find most people are Christians who come?
Well, not most that come to me. I think it's a natural phase in a person's life. If they were raised in any way a cradle Catholic, cradle Christian, at some point to seriously question the roots of that and the dogmas of that. And so naturally people throw out some of the bathwater. Historically, some people have thrown out the bath as well. But when people experience those two components that I said, great love or great suffering, they can then think, where is that container? And so it's not a requirement in any way that people return to a church or return to a denomination, but to begin to ask the questions, what sustains me? What sustains me through this great pain and great joy? And companioning can help people in that regard. With unattached to outcome, historically perhaps churches have been a little attached to outcome, which might be to have certain number of people in the congregation related to income or related to believing that they can support people to get to God. We don't need that kind of form to support us to get to God. God doesn't require a PR system. God doesn't require defending in any way. And so to have a companion that supports us to find that divine within, and as a result of finding that divine within, maybe we return to a church, maybe not. Maybe we return to being a poet. Maybe we return to being a most fabulous grandparent, parent, singer, rapper. Again, it's not what we do, it's how we do everything in terms of contemplative spirituality.
So in your experience, did you have mostly Christians? Or because I understand your approach that you help people finding the way how to do things.
A great teacher on how to do things was Jesus the Christ in the Western tradition.
Yes.
Not dogmatically, but open. I mean, Jesus the Christ came away to do with away with the law.
Yes.
And to invite people to find the law written on their own heart. Mm-hmm. And that would be the type of companioning that people would get from myself, which is not dogmatic. It's very open. As a massage therapist, as I said, creating an environment where everyone could accept their body and their being. And in spiritual companioning, to create an environment where everyone can accept themselves. And in accepting ourselves, our true self comes alive. Our divine self within comes alive for the purposes of bringing compassion out into the world, to bring gratitude, to bring awe.
So in a way, you help people finding their way of how to be a better person and how to be happy in there and content and not complain and feel bad about something, but to accept, like you said, the pain and the joys.
And certainly not necessarily to be a better person, just to be the person that they are, for you to be Beata, for me to be Pip. That's good enough. Great. That's the incarnation.
Thank you very much, Pip, for all your information and for your work on contemplative practices and the retreats. Thank you very much. And to our listeners, if you're interested in coming for a retreat to our Mercy Spirituality Center, please check out our website for more details at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz or give us a call at Auckland 09-638-6238. We offer guided group retreats, guided individual retreats, private retreats, and time out or quiet reflection days. You can come for a day or for several days. Please call us and arrange a date. And let me draw your attention now to some further events that are upcoming in our Mercy Spirituality Center. Wednesday, 23rd of July, Spirituality and Social Justice with Stephen Tolstrup. I interviewed Stephen last week and he was telling us about his background and about this workshop in which he will facilitate discussions and help the participants to see the importance and beauty of spirituality in a demanding ministry of social justice. It will be one step further to be fit for mission. Saturday, 26th of July, Sister Catherine Wiles Pickard, The Journey of Meditation. Sister Catherine's workshop starts at 9:30 in the morning and finishes at 4 p.m. If you would like to attend the meditation day, please register by giving us a call, 09-638-6238. And Friday and Saturday, 1st and 2nd of August, Introduction to Dream Work with Margaret Bowater. This will be a practical seminar which will explain how, when, and why we dream. Friday and Saturday, 1st and 2nd August, at our Mercy Spirituality Center. Booking is essential. And then on Friday, 8th and Saturday, 9th of August, Alexander Shire offers a retreat with the topic Walking the Four-Path Christ Journey. Alexander Shire was my guest in the studio at the beginning of June. If you want to listen to our conversation on the radio, you can do so by going on the website of Radio FM 104.6 at www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk. And then you check out the interviews that are archived. If you are thinking of doing a retreat in our center, please give us a call, or if you would like to stay a night or just have silence, please give us a call at 09-638-6238 and have a look at our website, www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. Thank you very much, Pip, again.
My pleasure.
And have a good time here in Auckland.